Rowley Regis Grammar School sat atop the Rowley Hills, overlooking the Stour Valley with magnificent views across Clent and beyond. On a hot summer's day, the heat inversion caused the emissions from Round Oak steel powders in Brawley Hill to engulf all in an orange dome set against a backdrop of green rolling hills and powder-blue skies dotted with cotton ball clouds. It probably blighted more people with respiratory problems than 20 fags a day, but it did look stunning. And the school was itself an impressive-looking edifice when viewed from the orange glow upwards. It was brand new, modern, and a pinnacle of local educational attainment of its time. The project started life down in the valley in Wright's Lane Old Hill, using Victorian premises vacated by the local central school. It became a grammar school in 1948. After persistent lobbying by the headmaster, Mr. George T. Lloyd, that the premises were unfit, the new school was built in Halls Lane, Rowley Regis, and opened in September 1962. It remained for a mere 13 years until Sandwell Metropolitan Borough Council closed it in July 1975 as part of a phasing out of grammar schools in favour of comprehensive education. After further alternate use, by 2008 this short-lived seat of learning had been demolished entirely and redeveloped such that little trace of the original remains. How times and attitudes change, and it seems that for some the very notion of grammar schools now sticks in the craw like cockfighting or eating red meat. On reflection, since the concept of grammars was rooted in churning out a steady stream of administrators to oversee the colonies of an empire that no longer existed, they may have a point. Even so, as a pupil from 1965 through to the class of 1972, I was fortunate and rather proud to undertake all of my secondary education there and to attain my modest clutch of O and A levels, as they were then known, before moving on. I use the word fortunate advisedly. I was fortunate, not privileged. Very few of my council house counterparts would ever consider ourselves that. And it was but for the support of my decidedly working-class parents that I ever got there, let alone stayed the course. An expression attributable to several, but notably George Bernard Shaw, is that youth is wasted on the young. That being so, then mea culpa. Although in my defence, no more so than any other teenager from the past 1,000 generations, nothing changes. The challenge is more to recognise and accept when youth has receded and there is less life remaining than what has gone before. Armed with such critical reflection, one may begin to atone for careless extravagances of the past and perhaps gain valued insight into what this life thing is all about. But back to my grammar school and the man who spearheaded the drive for it, the formidable George T. Lloyd, whose reputation as an educator was writ large. He was also a justice of the peace, which likely manifested itself in his approach to discipline. To the pupils of Rowley Grammar, he was known universally as the Gaffer and was held in a combination of dread fear and unquestioned respect. To our parents, I suspect his setting the bar high gave comforting affirmation that their charges were in capable hands. Mr. Lloyd was a stickler for early morning assembly, that compulsory period of pious Christian readings, solemn music, prayers, songs, and an address by the man himself before the school day began in earnest. How many schools still do that? Anyway, it was one such morning address in 1970 that the man himself gravely informed us that Bertrand Russell had died. Pause for reverent silence. Back to reality. Bertrand who? I pondered for a while before returning to the metaphorical shallow end where I splashed irreverently with my contemporaries, as one of that age does, without giving second glance towards the deep end where so much more lay waiting but which brings responsibilities for self-determination. Perhaps that defines the transition from youthful braggadocio to mature contemplation, that hurdle between the shallows and the depths. We all handle it in our own way. For me, it has been an evolving recognition that the works of the great thinkers may hold the key to another door that I now need to negotiate in my continuing travels along Shakespeare's mortal coil. There's no compulsion to do so, but it is all too easy to become stuck in a comfortable rut. So, I began to familiarise myself, become acquainted, you understand, I claim no more intellectual rigour than that, with the thoughts of the great philosophers. I quickly learned philosophy comprises many subgroups: logic, metaphysics, existentialism, ethics, epistemology, aesthetics, the list goes on. I'm also more impressed by those who maintain an unbroken line of reasoning without the need to introduce the concept of a god to bridge difficult conceptual gaps. Now, this should not be taken as indicative of agnosticism. I simply find it unconvincing to develop strands of coherent thought that are then held together by the glue of dubious deities, the existence of which by definition cannot be proven. But let me not digress. Where does this fit into my tale? Well, it's a tale of pure coincidence, since I was minding my business strolling round my adopted home of Hay on Wye recently, when I stumbled across a hardback book in one of the town's numerous bookshops. Russell Remembered is a charming account written in 1970 by fellow philosopher Rupert Crawshay Williams, who came to know Russell well in the final 25 years of his life. And remarkably, although by this time Russell was already 75, he was still yet to harvest some of his finest crops. Escorted back to my school days, the front cover sparked me to remember Russell too, and on impulse, I bought it for the princely sum of a couple of quid. It was that same day, shortly after acquiring the book, I realised that the gaffer's announcement of Russell's death on the 2nd of February 1970 found me here exactly 50 years later, almost to the day, making my move over that hurdle, my youthful disdain at last confined to where it should henceforth remain, in the past. And it was quite cathartic. Over the next few days, I devoured Russell Remembered and realised that the early part of my life overlapped with that of a genius, the greatest philosopher this country, possibly the world, has ever produced. What's even more uncanny is that he was born just a short jaunt down the road in Monmouth and spent time with the Clough Ellis family at Port Merion, a favourite haunt of mine. Bertrand Arthur William Russell, 3rd Earl Russell, Order of Merit, Fellow of the Royal Society, 1872 to 1970, was a philosopher, logician, mathematician, historian, writer, essayist, social critic, political activist, and Nobel laureate. In the early 20th century, Russell led the British revolt against idealism. He's one of the founders of analytical philosophy. He's widely held to be one of the 20th century's premier logicians and co-wrote Principia Mathematica, an attempt to create a logical basis for mathematics. Russell was a prominent anti-war activist and went to prison for his pacifism during World War I. In 1950, he was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature, quote, in recognition of his varied and significant writings in which he champions humanitarian ideals and freedom of thought. One of his protégés was a young Ludwig Wittgenstein, the harbour of a ferocious intellect that anyone except the cognoscenti usually finds impenetrable. Russell's monumental A History of Western Philosophy, published in 1945, is an examination of Western philosophy from the pre-Socratic era to the early 20th century. It attracted some criticism for lack of depth, particularly from the post-Cartesian period, but nevertheless became a magnum opus that has remained in print ever since. When Russell was awarded the Nobel Prize, A History of Western Philosophy was cited as one of the books that won him the award, and its success secured an income through the latter part of his life. His eloquence is as mesmerising as it is incisive. Here are a few examples. On his views of the existence of God, he clarifies his stance effortlessly. I do not pretend to be able to prove that there is no God. I equally cannot prove that Satan is a fiction. The Christian God may exist, so may the gods of Olympus, or of ancient Egypt, or of Babylon. But no one of these hypotheses is more probable than any other. They lie outside the region of even probable knowledge, and therefore there is no reason to consider any of them. It is not difficult to see why I quickly warmed to this man. As for definition, the point of philosophy is to start with something so simple as to not seem to be worth stating, and to end with something so paradoxical that no one will ever believe it. And this, even now, a lesson for our times. To teach how to live without certainty, and yet without being paralysed by hesitation, is perhaps the chief thing that philosophy in our age can still do for those who study it. Learning is a series of events that brings about a relatively permanent change in behaviour. It evidently need not be instantaneous, and 50 years down the line, my early exposure to Russell has brought about, albeit belatedly, a relatively permanent change in behaviour that has realigned my own direction of travel. In other words, I have learned. For those who are now in their teens and splashing in the shallows with energetic detachment, well, youth is still wasted on the young. Yet they are young just once, so let them enjoy it. And please do not let us be too envious of their good fortune in still being at the distant end of the pool in which we, too, once splashed in abandon. And that, I would suggest, is a conundrum that ought to be addressed by any education system that seeks to embrace both immediacy and longevity. The balance between what is taught now in preparation for impending adulthood and that which is subliminally retained and which may offer sustenance more than half a lifetime down the line, when the physicality may have changed, but the soul still requires nourishment. Ah, well, it's a never-ending cycle that I do not envisage deviating too much in the foreseeable future. Boys and girls will continue to be boys and girls. In the meantime, as age inevitably creeps upon me, and it seems every day more bits start to creak, I draw comfort from the words of Winston Churchill. We are happier in many ways when we are old than when we were young. The young sow wild oats, the old grow sage.